You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 121 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm delighted this afternoon to be joined by Scottish BAFTA award winner, a man who has also written music for the 2008 US Olympic team, as well as Cyberpunk 2077, and also, most recently, a man who's written the music for the hit Netflix documentary, The Manosphere, Paul Leonard Morgan. Paul, welcome.
Thank you very much. Should I get my weights out? It's like, yeah, hey, well, welcome to The Manosphere. Yeah, it's been a bizarre week, actually. There's another film out, Pretty Lethal, which came out yesterday. It was Uma Thurman and Maddie Ziegler and all this kind of stuff. And it's, yeah, it's all a bit bonkers, but lovely to meet you.
Yes, you too. It sounds like it's been quite an interesting and busy time. So thank you so much for making time in your incredibly hectic schedule for me. It's very much appreciated. But something I didn't mention in the intro, kind of the reason why you're here, I guess, which, you know, would be helpful, is that you have a daughter, Zoe, with Hirschsprungs. Would you like to take us, I guess, back to when she was born, back to the beginning for us?
I absolutely will. But before I do that, I will also say that the randomness of my career, I did a film 2-3 years ago with Zoe Coletti.
Wow.
On Gigi and Nate. And I had no idea that she had Hirschsprungs until then. You know, you gradually follow people. You get to meet the actors and everything. And yeah, all right, you know. And then I was like following her going like, what? She follows Hirschsprungs, blah, 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 blah. I was like, that's weird. So yeah, it's this random small world.
Very. Well, I guess that's also one person that we've met in person in common. I've also met her at a Hirschsprungs conference.
There you go. 7 steps to Kevin Bacon. So yes. Anyway, yeah. So my daughter, what do you want to know? She was born in Glasgow. So we'd been kind of, me and my wife had been back and forth to the States. We weren't living here, but I was starting to do quite a lot of soundtrack work over here. Got a elder daughter called Naomi, who's a couple of years older than Zoe. And then we just decided that we'd have Zoe back in Glasgow, surrounded by family, you know, support and all that kind of stuff. And randomly, I mean, I won't give you all the gruesome details, but she was accidentally born in the bathroom. She was like, it was all over Christmas and it was 2 weeks late and all of that. And we're just like, oh, God's sake. So then my wife's parents went home to do Hamilton. It was just like, look, we'll give you a shout when it's all happening. And then just like, oh, delivered at home. But my wife absolutely kicked ass. She was amazing. And yeah, so we're just like, okay, this is cool. We got this. We're fine. You know, the ambulance guy's first ever delivery at home. So he was like, this is amazing. Oh, I'll cut the cord. I was like, no, that's my job.
And give me those scissors.
Yeah, and then 3 days later, the same midwife that we'd had with Naomi. And it's bizarre because you don't really have midwives over here. I'm in LA now. So you don't really have midwives over here. But in the UK, obviously, fantastic NHS. And she called. She's like, how's it going? And we're just like, oh, we're good. Yeah, we got this. We're fine. You know, child number two. And she's like, well, I might just pop in, you know, because I'm just on the other side of the park. In Glasgow, you just walk everywhere. So we're just like, oh, we come around for a cup of tea, you know, all good. And she came round and she kind of checked Zoe out. And she was like, don't mean to stress you, but you should probably get her to hospital, like, now. So Andy, my wife, was like, well, why? And she's like, well, she hasn't, you know, puked up meconium and she hasn't done any of this stuff. She hasn't pooped it out. It's all a bit weird. And she's also looking quite, her stomach's looking inflated. And so Andy took her off to hospital. And she basically stopped breathing the moment that she got to hospital. And there was a doctor, it was a Saturday, I think it was, and there was a doctor on call. And he was just like, I know what this is. And no one knew what the heck it was. And he was one of like 9 specialists in the world. that dealt with Hirschsprungs. And he happened to be on call that day. They rushed Zoe off, got her breathing again down. I mean, it's utterly horrific. Then, you know, got her breathing again. And you know, he said, right, okay, well, look, this is what it is. I can't prove it yet, but this is what it is. And, you know, trying to work out, as you know, is it Hirschsprungs? Is it not? What's this? What's this? What is Hirschsprungs? All that kind of stuff. And so they started doing some tests, came up inconclusive, did some more tests, but you know, it's just literally 3 days old. And you're like, oh my God, your life is falling apart. And they're like, right, she might have spina bifida, she might have this. It was, of course, you looking up all these words, going, these mean nothing to me. All I know is that our life is going to change dramatically. But yeah, and then about another 3 or 4 days later, he's like, I'm going to do some more tests. This is it. You know, I know this. I specialize in this. It's just so bizarre that he's the guy that was on call. So he did the test and he's like, ha-ha. You know, so we're now brought in. This is at the wonderful Glasgow Children's Hospital, which again was called York Hill in those days. We didn't even know it bloody existed. And this was 1 mile down the road from our house. Yeah, incredible place. So it was a very, very long 2 or 3 months when we're in there and we didn't know if she's going to make it or not. And then he calls us in, Carl, his name was, Dr. Carl. And he says, right, so, you know, we're going to do this operation called a pull through. And we're like, well, do we have any options? He was just like, going to be honest, no. Also going to be honest, not every kid makes it, you know, at this age. But he said, yeah, you got about a 60-40 chance. So we're like, but that doesn't, it's weird, isn't it? It doesn't sound very much to me, like when you've got a new kid there. And so you've gone through the trauma of sort of giving birth at home. And he's, say, complete rock star. Then we had it checked out and then we get, you know, off to York Hill. And then he's like, oh, 60-40 chance for living. So anyway, so you haven't really got any choice. So you did the pull through. And you kind of, again, you know, your life is ups and downs, as you know. It's kind of like, is she okay? Is she not? Is she okay? Is she not? They kind of said, well, pull through kind of worked, but didn't. We're going to do another bit because, you know, we pulled it through and it seems to be working, this part of it, but not really. But, and she's got medium length, whatever. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's very bizarre, isn't it? When they explain that, well, she's not really going to have a colon and we're going to pull through and then we're going to do this. But there are three tiny marks in her stomach. That's it. Which still to me is bloody mental. The fact that they can do all of this tiny surgery kind of through there, keyhole surgery. So, yeah. And then we had another. You know, so I'd say this was probably after a month they did this surgery. Again, it was like, well, 13 years ago now, but it was about another month. So it was about a month she was in, then did the surgery, and then about another month and a half she was in hospital. And yeah, so I mean, that was how it came about.
Wow. I mean, and like you said, with the surgery, I mean, I go back to, well, 34 years when I had mine, and I mean, I'm scarred all over the place. You know, massive, great scars. Yeah. And we're talking, you know, from one side to the other. So it just fascinates me that, what, 10, 20 years on, they're doing keyhole. And, you know, you've got these sort of small dots. I've seen them with, you know, parents have sent me photos of their children's scars. And it just fascinates me that I think that's really good for, I think it's really good for the future. Because I think it's going to be, you know, obviously the less sort of scars that you have, I think it's going to be probably a lot harder to notice, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we always said to Zoe, it's like, this is your war wound, you know, you got this. And gradually it's going away. And we're just like, no, I want you to have a... But yeah, it was, you know, absolutely bonkers what they can do. As I say, to like, you know, separate it from your incise to then pull through to then kind of re-sew and all that kind of stuff. It's bonkers. So definitely sort of then, you know, the grim side of it, they give you these big metal tools to keep on pushing up a bottom to kind of keep it nice and open and all that kind of stuff, was a pretty miserable kind of I can't remember, it's about 3 months, I think it was, you know, different sizes. And yeah, you got this little kid who you don't want to hurt. He's like, it won't hurt. We're looking at it going, really? You know? So that wasn't particularly pleasant. But I think then the hardest part, honestly, was we saw him for the first week and then the next week and then, the surgeon, and then another 2 weeks, and then you split it out, and then it was a month, and then it was once every 2 months. And we said, well, look, we're thinking of heading off to the States for a bit, because I would say we'd already been back and forth in my job writing music. And so it was brilliant. So he's then started Skyping doctors at the LA Children's Hospital to start teaching them about Hirschsprungs, which is absolutely amazing. It's just we all have this thing, don't we, of liking to share our knowledge, but you don't really think of that with the doctors. And he's just like, I've got this cool new surgery. Right. Hey, LA, want to have a Skype? Skype, how long ago it was. So that was pretty cool. But I mean, I would say that the hardest part of it, and we didn't realize there was a community at that stage, we had no idea really what Hirschsprungs was. You start doing your research. AOL was invented in those days. So, the internet did exist. But the hardest part was definitely over the years. Zoe had problems in the sense that she just had no control. So she would keep on pooping left, right, and center. And as she started to go to school at 4 and 5, and we're like, shit, this is not great. And you don't know if it's connected to Hirschsprungs or not. So we went and got these little nappy pads, diaper pads, whatever, that you line her underwear with. But, kids are shit. So going off to school at 5 years old and you're kind of a little bit smelly, and it's like, okay, listen, you've got to try and go to the toilet. If you feel it coming and you're trying to train her up, I mean, what the hell do we know? But you're trying to get, look, if you can feel it, and we'll speak to the doctor and say, does she still have the same awareness? And he was like, no, she will gradually train into it. It tends to happen when they're about 10 or 11. But at this stage, she'll gradually just kind of feel it, but she won't have as much warning as other people, basically. And again, I'm just speaking from my experiences. I'm sure everybody's got different experiences. But so we were just like, okay. So it's like, Zoe, if you feel anything, just bloody run out of that classroom. You make the teachers aware that she's going to have this issue. Most of them are pretty cool about it. But at the same time, you're trying not to make it a big deal. But it was incredibly frustrating as a parent when she comes home and she's pooped her pants and everything, and it's like, oh, God, Zoe. And not going to lie, as a parent, you're starting to lose it with her when you get to about 7 years old, and you're just like, oh, come on, you're being lazy now. And of course it's not. And then you hate yourself for saying that. And it's like, but it's this constant battle because you've got everything else going on in life, and like, tidy your room. No. Well, is this a sign that you're not?
Starting to question everything.
Story of my life. But yes, I mean, and the weird thing is, you're speaking to your parents and you're speaking to different people about it. Then we found a Facebook page and we started going on that a bit. And you realize that everybody's got the same issues. And it just went away. It was really weird. And it wasn't like an overnight thing. It was just, we suddenly realized after about kind of 4 months. And I want to say she was maybe 8. Yeah, something like that. But we suddenly realized, hang on, when was the last time we had to buy a pack of these things? And you could only get them in the UK. They didn't exist in the US. So we'd literally buy 4 or 5 of these boxes of these underwear liners, send them to our parents, her grandparents, and then they would send them over in this brown bag. And we're like, customs ever saw this? This is going to look really weird. What's in these liners? Cocaine?
Nothing, you do drug smuggling.
Sprungs.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
No, the customs would, customs have a field day there.
Yeah. So, anyway, thank goodness we're not doing that at the moment.
No, it's good, but it's interesting though, because Hirschsprungs can be like that sometimes, where you can have all of these issues and all of these problems, whether it's pain, whether it's whatever. And then they just sort of randomly go away rather than anything, sort of any medication or any kind of treatment or whatever, and then sort of, I don't want to say grow out of it, but it kind of, did it sort of feel that way?
It definitely felt that way. I mean, as I said, like going back, and they gave us these big metal rods, as I say, after her operation, and we had to keep on putting those up her bottom. I can't remember what they were called. For her, she'd be in tears, and then obviously as a parent, like, oh my God, of course. So he says now, but obviously I don't remember that. Good. But apparently that was to help the scar heal perfectly, so that then she's got a nice open thing. So it's like, okay, fine, we'll do this. So that was for kind of 2-3 months. Then feel like job done with that. Okay, that's fine. Now we just got to try getting on with it. Because if you didn't use those, then the hole would be too small, or I can't remember. So, but yeah, it definitely felt like she just suddenly grew out of it. And it was weird because then you remember the conversation going, he said, look, it happens to different people at different times. Sometimes it never fully heals and you don't have total control. Other times you got perfect control from 5 or 6. And to say, Zoe, I seem to remember it was about 8 or 9, but I say for me, it was just the weird thing of we suddenly realized. It was like, oh, was that yesterday? Oh, was that last week? Was that last month? Oh, we just haven't. Oh, excellent. It seems to be good. And the shit thing is, I say, like, I don't use Facebook tons, but I'm on it occasionally to keep in touch with relations and stuff back in the UK. And when I'm on there and just say the Hirschsprung's group comes up and you see the people going through the same stuff, and there are people in the US saying, hey, should we go and see blah, 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 doctor, blah, blah, blah. And of course over here it's, hey, you're going to mortgage your house to go and just have a meeting. And we're thinking like all of this in the UK was on the NHS. If we'd had her over here, we would have been bankrupt, you know? But it was the fact that it was the kids' hospital, which we knew nothing about. And the fact that it was a mile away from us, the fact that the doctor was on duty that night, it was all of this weird, whatever you believe in, you know, it was like, yeah, thanks, big guy, you know, or big woman, whatever you are, kind of thing. Thank you for keeping an eye on us. Because then, yeah, it was just that whole thing of actually having someone to speak to. And I think that's the issue, is when not that many people know about it. Yeah, and again, wonderful kind of armchair detectives now with Google. You can work things out for yourself, or at least kind of find people in this Facebook group or wherever it is that you are, or on your podcast. But then, you know, there wasn't that much talk about it. So you're kind of left your own devices going, is it cerebral palsy? Is it spina bifida? What is it? You know, and the doctor's mentioning all these words and you don't know what it is and you're just flipping terrified.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine. I mean, I know... You know, Facebook groups are great and all, but they are everything and anything. They are everybody's problems all at once. And you think, okay, I'm scrolling through and is this to do with me? What's this and what's that? And so, I mean, Facebook groups are great, but I think, yeah, I mean, certainly when I'm, you know, similar to when I was growing up, I never knew anyone with Hirschsprung's. I never, you know, because it's, even if you were close to, I know we said this a little bit before, but even if you were a mile away from someone with Hirschsprung's, you can't tell if they have Hirschsprung's or not, you know. And, you know, it's not like we walk around with a great big sign on our back saying Hirschsprung's. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't sort of work like that.
You're unique now, Tom.
Oh, it's a shame.
I went through all that to find out these will have got.
Yeah. But I know that... I guess, you know, in terms of meeting people with Hirschsprung's, or certainly talking to people with Hirschsprung's, or have an awareness of it, at least, it's probably a little bit more common now that we've got, you know, Instagram, Facebook and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I know, because you've told me as well, just as we were speaking before, that you have also met somebody else, another Zoe, with Hirschsprung's as well. How did that sort of come about?
Yeah, so I was working on this film called Gigi and Nate, which was, say, probably like 4 years ago or something, 3 or 4 years ago. And I was just, yeah, I was standing, there's the premiere of it over here in LA. And yeah, I was just went up and was chatting away to her and her boyfriend. And, you know, and everyone's always very quick, like, oh, it's a star. You can't speak to them. They're just another person. You know, they might have a very fancy trailer, but, you know, and then they're out kind of thing. But, you know, it's very hard to expose people. It's just everybody's the same, right? And everybody has a job. And, all right, I don't feel I've had a job. My one job was playing piano in dance school when I was at the conservatoire in Glasgow. But I've never had a job because it's a passion. I get to write music. It's amazing. And if the actors are the same, they're just like, someone's paying us to do this. God, we've lucked out. This is cool. But yeah, and just, yeah, we got chatting to her, as I say. And so, yeah, we just kind of swapped details. And it was only then that I saw that she follows Hirschsprungs. And I was like, you follow Hirschsprungs? How do you follow Hirschsprungs? And then there's a page to it and there's that. And so I did a bit of research. I was like, no frigging way. You know, she says, oh, Zoe, on her Instagram, Zoe Coletti, I have Hirschsprungs. I was like, that's an interesting thing to say in your profile. Not, I'm amazing. Not, I'm a brilliant actor. You might know me from such roles as, but, you know, kind of thing. It was like, oh, yeah, I've got Hirschsprungs. Oh, I'm also an actor. I was like, that's a pretty cool thing to do, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. No, so Zoe is really cool. Although that she came to as many people know, she came to a conference that we had in Liverpool last February. Did a really good presentation. She was over here filming and she came down, did an excellent presentation, and yeah, she was fantastic, met everybody. And I think it's one of those, isn't it, where, you know, if you want someone, I know there's lots of, you know, I interview lots of parents who have children with Hirschsprungs, and they want someone to look up to. They want someone to, they can look at and go, oh, well, they have Hirschsprungs, but they're doing really, really well. And I think she's excellent for that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Absolutely. And again, you know, I go back to it when you're told by the doctor, yeah, Zoe was 3 days old and she rushed to hospital, and your brain is just a fog and you're trying to keep things normal for your eldest kid. So we're taking it in turns. You know, I'm at hospital, you know, on the late shifts. Andy's at hospital during the day. We're literally just playing tag at bath time with Naomi, our eldest, just so she feels there's some normality. But your life is just in upheaval. And particularly when you don't know what things are, you're kind of like, oh, this is the worst. This is just awful. So I think that was the thing where it's kind of like, well, it's, you always in life want someone just to go, it'll be okay. And if you got someone to look up to, let's say, and whatever your role is, whether you want to look up to an actor or you want to look up to, you know, someone working in a shop, it doesn't matter, so long as it's kind of like, fine, they're elder and they've got on with it and they're living with it and it doesn't actually seem to have that many long-term repercussions, then it's awesome. And I think that was my thing. So when Zoe was in hospital, I think it was about she'd had the operation, she had the next bit, she was fine, you know, obviously she's still in NICU in intensive care. But I think there were two things with that children's hospital. One was the fact that the nurses were just incredible. And I know everyone always goes on here, the NHS clap. That'll help them in life. Here, have a sandwich. Oh, no, I can't afford it. Doesn't matter, but we're button free. But they were absolutely amazing. And two nurses we remember so clearly, and one's called Marnie. And she was just the most brilliant person. And you're in a complete state as a parent, and she just... One night, I remember she got Zoe out of her little incubator, and Zoe's all attached with all of these kind of tubes and everything. She takes her out. You hear this. I was like, what? She said, oh, don't worry. They come detached the whole time. So she got her out. She could see I was really upset, and I gave Zoe a hug. And yeah, just teeny tiny thing. And she was amazing. And there was this other nurse who lost. There was a teddy that our neighbor over here sent over, and Zoe's literally had this teddy from day two. I think we opened it on day two of her life because the first day was a little bit over to tidy up the house a bit. And we took her into hospital, and every single picture that we have of Zoe, I did like a little journal every single day. You know, here's a picture, you know, things that you try as a parent just to try and rationalize and keep normal. So Teddy was in all those pictures, and there was one day they taken the sheets, and I went to go and get Zoe, you know, doing swaps with Andy. Where's Teddy? Teddy's nowhere. Oh my god. And it's like, it's utterly ridiculous. It makes no bloody difference, but it's the thing that you're focusing on. So one of the nurses was absolutely bloody brilliant. She's like, well, we changed the sheets however many hours ago. She went all around the hospital to find the chute where the sheets had gone down, and we got a picture of her like three floors down or whatever, holding up bloody Teddy, which was wrapped in this sheet. She's been through all of the sheets, worked out where it's gone down the chute. We're just like, these frigging nurses and NICU are just amazing. So when Zoe was fine, she's still in the hospital. My best mate, Aidan, who lived in Loch Lomond, which is about 40 minutes away from Glasgow Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
They changed their name from York Hill. But so he said, look, there's this thing called a kilt walk, which is being done for charity. And the kilt walk was a thing done by Tom Hunter, the guy that owned QuickFit. So I think he had started it up on Glasgow. Again, need to forgive me because it was about 13 years ago, so I'm trying to remember the whole details. But they did this thing where it's like, right, everybody walks 26 miles in a kilt. And you start off at Hampden, home of the greats. And then you walk through Glasgow, through the various parks, you walk all the way up the River Clyde, all the way up, etc. And then you get to Loch Lomond and you finish at Alexandria on the Loch. So he was like, I'm going to do this to raise money for Children's Hospital. And of course, I haven't slept for about 2.5 months. I'm completely fried. Yeah, I was just like, oh, you fucker. Well, if you're going to do it, I guess I'm going to have to do it. And there was a thing then where if you had a group of five, then you could say who the money went to. You know, all the money would go to your charity rather than being split amongst how many charities. So we got some of my wife's cousins, one of our neighbors, Morag. You know, we basically wrote them all in. We're all completely unfit. You know, I used to do a lot of sport, and then, you know, between this and work and everything. So the five of us met at Hampden. Zoe's got out of hospital, I think literally 3 days before. And I got my agent over here. I've got all my friends over here, here in LA, everyone back in Glasgow. And I think we raised something like 20,000 quid, which was like amazing. We bankrupted everybody. And it was chucking it down with rain, and it didn't matter. It was like, Zoe's out of hospital. This is amazing. You know, got cramp every single mile. It was like, my God. And it was mental. There were probably like, I don't know, 5,000 people in kilts all doing this walk. And it was a walk at that stage. So I was like, okay, that's awesome. And it was like this wonderful celebration, and everybody came out, and it was, you know, I think a little bit teary, should we say. But it was awesome. And then the next year, I was like, okay, well, look, we'll do it again. And the kilt walk still goes on now. It's quite a big thing. In Scotland, they have one in Aberdeen, one in Dundee, one in Glasgow. I think they might do Edinburgh as well. But it's become this big thing. And you get to know the community that do this kilt walks, all about raising money for charity and so on. And everyone has their own charities that mean something to them, don't they? So second year, I was like, okay, I'm going to do it again. And it's my way of saying thanks to, you know, the Children's Hospital that saved Zoe's life, and so did it again. But I then found out that I was going to be in the States working on a film, and I couldn't be back in Glasgow. I was like, crap, well, I've already started collecting all the sponsorship. I was like, what am I going to do? So I was like, all right, I'll do the kilt walk over here. So I did the kilt walk over here, 26 miles in the LA heat, in this very, very kind of proper woolen kilt. It was hot, man. And then I had a friend over here that kind of joined me for some of the miles, and various friends just came out. And it was quite sweet then, because like all these American friends were just getting a bit of tartan plaid, as they call it. And just, you know, it might be a sash, or it might be this. Some people had kind of a mini skirt, you know, whatever. And they would come and join me for a mile here and there. And I think we raised again, like maybe 10,000 quid or something. But it was just me. And it was awesome. Like, I remember getting to the farmer's market, which is a where you go and get your veggies and fresh fruit and veg and all that kind of stuff. And there's a very LA one called The Grove, which is where all the celebs hang out. And someone, I was going around with my sporran and my kilt, and I opened up the sporran and people would just be putting like dollar bills in or $10 bills. And I had my t-shirt on from the children's hospital, you know, okay. And so many people were getting pictures done. And the whole point was like, it's a thank you to the children's hospital and it's an awareness, you know, to try and raise awareness for Hirschsprungs. Except for one of the policemen at the Grove Farmers Market, because it's quite a well-to-do place. He saw me from side on. So all he could see was someone putting their hand right. That's not a word of a lie. So the police were, excuse me, you can't do that in public. I was like, no, it's a sporran. You don't understand. So he was awesome. And he was like, well, what is this? I was like, well, yeah, this saved my children's, my daughter's life, et cetera. So he said, right. He said, well, I'm going to be down at Santa Monica Pier. I'm driving down there now, which was still about another kind of 16 miles. So he was like, find me when you're down there. So we went down there. I got this picture just sprawled across his car in my kilt when we got down. People buy into it, you know, and that's the thing, is it doesn't matter what the culture is. It doesn't matter whether it's America, whether it's the UK, wherever it is. When you tell someone something that actually means something to you, then people, if you're honest and you're truthful about it, people get into it. So then every year after that, I started doing a kilt walk. So it's like, okay, well, what am I going to do now? It's 3 years since Zoe was born. So I can't just do 26 miles because people are going to get bored of this. So suddenly I was like, right, I'm kind of going to do a cycle ride from Santa Monica Pier to the Griffith Park Observatory, which is 26 miles. And so you go past like the Hollywood sign and you do all this kind of stuff. I was trying to make it interesting for the people back in the UK that were sponsoring me. And then get us to do that with two people, Arbel and Jade. One was from Running Club because I'd started running then. And Arbel's a music agent, not mine. They've kind of cycled up with me and it's got this git of a hill at the end. And you're like, no, so we left Santa Monica Pier at about 4:30 a.m. Yeah, so it's pitch black. Get up there. And then Andy and the kids met me up there. So our kids now are maybe, we'll say 3 and 4 and a half or something. Get some bacon rolls and whatever. And then I started the walk, the long walk back to Santa Monica Pier. So then the next year, it was like, okay, well, what am I going to do now? Okay, next year I did a paddle board. So it was like, okay, everything had to have 26 miles. So it's like 26 miles up, 26 miles back, 26 meters on a paddle board or 126 or whatever. So that was a brilliant picture of me jumping in the kilt, kind of all that. And gradually, for me, it was suddenly just like, okay, this is great. I'm raising awareness for Hirschsprungs. I'm raising awareness for the Children's Hospital. I'm also sending loads of pictures back to all the nurses and doctors back there just going, you freaking rock. And yeah, we'd send them random pizzas because obviously 8-hour time difference between LA and Glasgow. So sometimes on a Friday night, we just send pizzas and say, hey, send this up to the NICU nurses. You know, don't have to say who it's from. Just give them a random thing. And so as the years progressed, then it was like, okay, well, Zoe's 5. What am I going to do now? Right. Everybody, I want you, I'm stopping bankrupting you because you all donated enough. This is now about celebrating Zoe's life. So I want everyone to donate £5, $5 or $5.55. So, you know, on Just Giving, you just see this page of like $5.55. Some gave 55, some gave 555, but it wasn't the point. It was just, I said, I want everyone to write a nice note to the doctors and nurses at the Children's Hospital. And it was awesome. You know, you'd have like 3, 4, 5 pages and we printed it out and we would send it off. And, you know, just, it was just sending a whole load of love their way. And then there was another year where it was like, okay, right, it's the 6th year. What the hell am I going to do? So it was like, right, I can't do 66 miles. Can I? Well, if I cycled a bit, and I think we just moved house. And then it was like, okay, right, if I cycle down to Santa Monica and then I'm going to run and I'm going to go to 66 composers. So like, this is me being geeky. I was like 66 composers in Hollywood. There are thousands of them, you know, I'm rubbish. Yeah, there are very good ones. There are some, you know, even worse than me, just, you know, I'm pretty low at the pile. But it was like, right, 66 studios, this is awesome. So got down to some, of course, composers, we work late into the night. Yeah, that's when the brain goes, oh, I've got this great idea. So one of the composers said, hey, well, you can start at my house because I'm normally working at like 4:30 a.m. So I literally left home. I think I cycled, I left at 1 o'clock a.m. Cycled in the pitch black, didn't, you know, hadn't looked at the route because we only just moved. I was like, and it was this bastard hill with a head flashlight on your head. And it's, I don't have a fancy bike, so it's kind of going along like this. Got down to this guy, Dave Buckley's house, and Harry Gregson Williams, who at the time, Harry Gregson Williams is like this massive composer who is just one of the sweetest guys out. And he was working on some Disney film. So I go down there. He's like, do you want a beer? I was like, dude, it's 4 a.m. I've got to start running for 3 days. He's like, come on. I was like, no, I've got to get. So yeah, they're finishing for the night. I started for the night. And I started running. So, you know, I had this big sheet of paper, and in the spore, and I've got my phone, I've got a battery pack, and I've got like a map of basically roughly where I'm going to be going. Because as you're going along now, you're trying to tag Glasgow Children's Hospital, and you're trying to tag all the people, and you keep posting because all the people that were sponsored, you're trying to give them updates. Here's me with Harry. Here's me here. Here's me that. And of course, your juice is running out on the phone. So you're trying to sort of keep it connected. But of course, when your sporin's a little sore when it's kind of going like that and you are literally running. So I'm running marathons now, 26 miles, and trying to go through. And composers were getting in touch, like massive composers going, look, you don't know me, but I heard what you're doing. Do you want to pop into my studio? They think that a mile away from where I'm going to be isn't very far, which is true if you're doing one. But suddenly you're getting a chance to go to one of the biggest composers of the world. And then like that. And I think I ended up running 40 miles that day. And like, yeah, you know, I'd started doing marathons. That's all fine. But 40 miles, like my legs were falling off. And I'd already cycled 26, whatever. So in the end, it turned out at 66.6666 miles, whatever. I was dying. It took 23 hours. I finished at 11:58. Andy, my wife, she came down to support me for the last 3 miles because my legs were giving in. But this is now what I'm known for. And sorry, very long story because I'm chatting quite a lot. But what I love is the fact that now, you know, I do these left, right and center every year. And people know me as this crazy Scotsman. I know I don't sound Scottish, but people know me as this crazy Scotsman who does that kilt run thing. And because I shake it up every year and do all these crazy things, it's that whole thing of like, well, why do you do it again? Hirschsprungs. And so it's just nice being able to drop that in. And then, you know, people are like, oh yeah, that Hirschsprungs. How is Zoe doing these days? You know, it's making it normal.
Absolutely. I love it. I absolutely love it. And I love more the fact that, like you said, if you do sort of 26 miles, maybe people think, oh, right, okay, well, it's another 26. I love the fact that it's different. And I love the fact that you're able to be creative with it as well. And you can go, right, I'll do a bit of paddleboarding. I've seen lots of the photos. I've seen lots of the little clips on Instagram. There's one with you with a, is it an elephant? I think it's an elephant. I think so. I think that's the one. But yeah, I love all of that stuff. And I love the fact that you can be creative with it and it's all a little bit different. And then it all ties into, well, how old Zoe is at the time, I guess.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's the thing, you know, life's shit at the moment, isn't it, for everybody. It says me sitting in my lovely studio in LA. But it really, yeah, there's so much crap going on. There's so much negativity and you could go, I'm so overwhelmed. And then you're just like, what can I actually do? Right? Well, all we can do is, I'm quite a positive person. And I think I like to celebrate other people. So it's just like, all right, well, I'm going to bring some goodness here. I'm going to bring some joy and all of this. And just hopefully people have a bit of a laugh at the kilt walk things that I do. And then, yeah. And it's just about kind of saying thanks and celebrating rather than saying, hey, look, I know everyone's skint, but hey, can everyone give me 20 quid? You know, and you set a thing. It's just like, oh, screw that. You know, she's 10. Give me 10p. Give me $1. You know, because then it resets because you got up to 9.99. It's like, right, give me $10, 10 or whatever. And then we got, when we moved over, we started then going like, okay, well, as we now live over here, we, Andy and I, started saying, well, look, we will match dollar for dollar whatever has been given in pounds up to X amount, and we'll give it to LA Children's Hospital as we're here. And we do. They're lovely. We've never had to use them, thank God, but it was always just the knowledge that they were there if we did. So all of the money from the kilt walks all go to, you know, to Glasgow Children's Hospital. And then we do a check every year for, so you know, last year she was 13. So it was, oh, sorry, last year she was 12. She just turned 13. Because it's getting expensive. So it was like, okay, we're going to do 2000 and $13.13, you know, whatever. So it's all the things. And again, it's just the visual element, which then Glasgow Children's Hospital, like, be able to go, right, all the 11s, all the 12s, 12, 12, all the 13s. But about 3 years ago, Aidan, the guy that started the Kilt Walk with me, he died just suddenly. He was like my best mate, and it was just before he was turning 50. So he had always said, I should do the big one sometime, and, you know, do one in LA and then get on a plane and, you know, come and do it in the UK. So I was just like, I obviously was devastated that it died. I was like, do you know what, sod it, let's do it. And it was, I think it was the 10th year. And so I did it here. And instead of saying, you know, not, I don't want to bankrupt you, but just like, look, if everyone does want to chip in 10 quid or 100 quid or whatever, that'd be absolutely awesome. I really want to go to town for Aidan. Did the Kilt Walk here, started at the house, went down to Malibu, and then running along. And it, of course, it is running, because try and get 26 miles in to do other stuff. So you're running, it's absolutely roasting hot. You're running along the PCH. I'm running into direct. It was utterly bizarre. I ran into directors of films I work with who were just walking out their dogs at like 10 a.m. Just, what are you doing? So they were all having their pictures taped in the morning. I've got to keep going. I've got to carry on. Got to LAX with 2 hours to spare. And I think that was like 28 miles, 29 miles, something like that. A mate, Richard, he came along. He's one of my best mates. He's from Scotland. He lives here. He's a writer. He came and did loads with me. Diana, one of our crazy German friends, she takes pictures every year. She's a professional photographer. Does like Robbie Williams, everything else kind of thing. So she has taken all these fantastic pictures. We got to the fairground at Santa Monica Pier. She takes all these pictures. I was like, right, can't stop. I've got to get going to LAX, which is still another, from there, about another 10 miles. Get to LAX. As I say, Richard has driven down earlier in the day with my bag to get on the plane. And then he's got an Uber back to come and do, I think he did probably like 16 miles in me or something. So he's an absolute legend. And then, yeah, and then got to LAX. There's a picture of me hugging him and our crazy friend Lucy, who came and did 4 miles with me. So again, it's just the fact that everybody comes along. It's a celebration of life. It's a celebration of friendship. I get on that plane. Oh God, my legs are dying. And of course, like, you know, just that your legs are up there somewhere in economy going, look, oh God. Not going to lie, had a few beers on the plane and then get off at Heathrow. And I was seizing up. I was like, I've got to keep walking. So this was now Saturday evening. They've done the Kilt Walk on the, is this right? Yeah, I've done the Kilt Walk on the Friday. It's an overnighter. Get into Heathrow Saturday evening. And this random guy comes up who says, were you doing a Kilt Walk in LA yesterday? I was like, yeah. It was like, I saw you going down Hollywood Boulevard, or whatever. No, it wasn't Hollywood Boulevard. I saw you down the Santa Monica Pier, whatever it was. So he asked to have a picture taken, you know, post it on Instagram, whatever. Get on the plane to Glasgow. He said, well, that's right, I'm going to Glasgow. So I said, all right, so am I. You're still on the plane. So I get to Glasgow. It's now Saturday night, about 10 p.m. And the Glasgow Kilt Walk is Sunday morning. And you've got to get down there for about 6 a.m. And of course, I'm jet lagged, so I can't sleep anyway. Plus, I've done my flipping Kilt Walk the day before, so I'm seizing up. My body's all over the place. So I just ended up down in Glasgow Green, which is where it starts, at this big park at maybe like 5 a.m. And then all of Aidan's friends were flying, a friend that had died, they all flew over from Belfast. So there was probably like 15 of us there, and some car up from Sunderland, a bunch of us all met up on Glasgow Green, had a hug, and then we were celebrating Aidan's life as much as that. So then we did the Kilt Walk there for 26 miles. Got to the end. So I'm not going to lie, like 52 miles in 2 days is pretty brutal. So at the end, and then I flew back to Glasgow, flew back to LA the next day. So, and British Airways, thank you very much. The jet wasn't working. So they made us walk down the steps to get on the runway, to walk back up. And it was like, is this a joke? I can't move. My legs are dead. But yeah, and again, yeah, I think we raised something like 25,000 quid or something for the children's hospital. So it was all awesome. But more importantly, it was about celebrating Aidan, celebrating life. And
thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.